Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonige,
Will Bluewater,
a seventh grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. And our special guest this week is Jason Lee of jasonlee.com, jasonleigh.org. And Jason is an American Indian descendant, mixed blood. He's a UFO experiencer. He's got a little knowledge about a lot of paranormal issues and got lots of contacts. And we'll touch very briefly, he's kind of sworn to secrecy about the recently reported incident of a couple of Sasquatch having been contained in Oklahoma, so he'll deny any knowledge of that. Anyway, welcome to the show, Jason. How are you?
Thank you, Blue Otter, and a whole matak wes and to all my friends out there.
Matak wes and yourself and pilameya for
being thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. How about we start with my heritage? I'm half Cheyenne and Irish, which some people say makes me an Indian with an attitude, although that's grossly exaggerated. I've been studying paranormal issues, including being a noted UFO researcher for, gosh, it's been over 30 years now. I'm almost getting older, you know. And that would include ESP, clairvoyance, which I'm a proven clairvoyant, as it's reflected on our website at jasonlee.org, where we have dozens and dozens of predictions, if you will, which I call portents, which is really a more articulate word for prophecy. Although prophecies tend to have a religious connotation to them, and I do believe, and I have stated publicly, that my clairvoyant gift is a gift from the Great Spirit, the God of many names that we all have given him all across the globe. And I have never received any money for any of the services I've done, including working with the police and FBI on missing children cases, even though there were rewards offered. It's just not my feel, not my spiritual feel, Otter, to accept any sort of monetary gain from what I consider a God-given gift. That would be
people just don't,
tantamount like, to a sin.
Yeah, that's right. We feel like we'll lose the gift if we accept, you know, we might take travel expenses or if we have to go somewhere, because if it's absolutely necessary that we get there, but no.
Well, certainly. And, you know, even charitable organizations have to buy envelopes and postage stamps. So you do have expenses, surely, you know. That's no problem. I really don't do any sort of readings, you know, palm readings or tarot card readings or anything of that nature. I know there are a lot of people out there who do, and I don't criticize them. If that's what they want to do, you know, fine. I don't label myself as a psychic, and if someone labels me as a psychic, I am quick to correct them. I'm a proven clairvoyant. Big difference.
Well, you were telling me about an amazing situation you had with a video that you took, a daytime encounter with UFOs. But don't let me tell you where to go in this interview. You know, just take let spirit speak. Take it from whatever you want to start from your beginning or jump around or whatever you want to do. You're welcome to do it, Jason.
I'm sorry, I'm having a difficult time hearing you. We must have a little bit of a bad connection. Did you say the broad daylight UFO encounter?
Well, can you hear me now?
A little bit better, yes.
Okay, what I was saying was don't take your cues from me as to what to talk about during the interview. Just let the spirit, you know, tell you where to go in the interview. But you were telling me about that incident, so... But fill us in on, you know, what do you feel like we need to know?
Well, I would think I'm most proud of course, my clairvoyant ability, which may also be connected to the UFO sightings that I've had since I was 9 years old. I wrote a book called Power Glide, which... sold out. We had 5,000 copies made and sold out within a year. So the only copies I have now are really on floppy disk, or I can email copies, you know, that sort of thing, until I get a paperback publisher. And I'm in negotiations for that right now. Although my musical album, we've really been concentrating on that. I write folk songs, which some have called Americana music. I have one song that is representative of the status quo of Native Americans, in which I entitled Wooden Indian. And a lot of people have seen these cigar store wooden Indians, if you would. They're mostly in cigar stores or some of these old Wild West saloons. And I was at a cafe in Nashville one day, and they had one. It was about a 7-foot-tall wooden Indian. And I was sitting there drinking my coffee, and in the distance was a elder. He said he was a Navajo, leather-faced. He looked like he could have been 300 years old. And he was sitting in the back of the room watching me, and I'm jotting down notes, looking at this wooden Indian, and I'm actually writing the song. And after I wrote a couple of verses, I realized, well, I had a great title, you know, Wooden Indian. And what I'm going to try to do is write the state of Native Americans, and that is to say from the past 500 years to the present day, and try not to offend anyone, of course, and yet try not to mention, oh gosh, Custer's Last Stand or any of that horror that we don't need to hear about, you know, especially in my songs. That's not what I'm about. I do try to write about truth and spirituality and honor and faith. So I didn't want to mention anything along that line. And I crafted the song, and then I looked up, and the elders started slowly walking towards me, and he came up, and he stopped, and he looked, and he said, "Writing song?" And I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Would you like to sit down, Uncle?" And he said, "Yeah." And he sat down, and I bought him a cup of coffee, and he asked me, he says, "You look more white than Native American. What's up with that?" And I laughed, and I said, "Well, my mother's side is Irish, you know, and they're about as white as you can get. And my father's side was Cheyenne." So he cracked a smile, and he says, "I see. Well, which side do you lean towards?" And I said, "Well, you know, I have to honestly say that I don't really know that much about my Native American heritage." And this was, to be honest with you, Otter, back in 1982. That's how long ago I wrote this song. But it's, as they say, if a song is good, it's forever. It's eternal. It's dateless, you know. And he suggested to me, he says, "You need to connect with that part of you that you're writing about now." And, of course, he had no idea what I was writing about, because I don't think he could have read Upside Down. And I had pushed my notebook to the side when he sat down to join me. So he didn't know I was writing a song entitled Wooden Indian. And he was right. You know, he was really right. After that day, that night, I went to the library and started reading up on the history of the Cheyenne. And then I went into my family history, found out about my grandfather and my great-great-grandfather, a man by the name of Tall Wolf, a warrior chief. And suddenly I realized, well, all of my life I have lived the white side, and now it's time for me to live the red side, to walk the red road, as we say. And I've been doing that ever since 1982, very proudly, and I continue to walk that red road even as we speak. And that should give you an idea of where I am spiritually. Then I start seeing, from the age of 9, not every day, you know, 5 years would go by, I would see something in the sky, but it would always be, there would be a prelude, okay, something in my mind, a voice, if you will, my own voice, would say, "Hey, look up here." And I would look up exactly in the area of the sky where there would be a bright, shiny object. And at times, these objects came in closer, and this was all in broad daylight. Then 5 years would go by, I'd see another one. 4 years would go by, I'd see another one. 2 years would go by, I'd see another one. Then I'm on a camping trip in southern Mississippi, which was, as it turned out, 4 miles from the Saturn Missile Project. This is where they built the Saturn missiles, which carried the Apollo capsules into orbit and also eventually and ultimately to the moon. Now, I say this because, as it turned, as fate had it, I ended up working for NASA in the final testing of the space shuttle Challenger. And so I'm on this camping trip with my wife and my brother and his wife, and I never sleep during campouts. You know, I'm sort of the all-night guard. You know, I think that comes from Vietnam. I was a Navy SEAL, and that was my job. I never slept until the sun came up, and then I fell asleep like a sack of potatoes, you know. But I'm sitting guard, and I've got the fire. I just threw a bunch of logs on the fire, and it's a blazing fire, and I'm sitting on this log, strumming on my guitar, and suddenly I see this blue star. and it's coming from the north, and it's heading due south. And I might want to interject here. I'm an expert navigationalist. I also have a radar endorsement in electronics, so I know about radar and directions. I can read the stars. I can read the sun. I know where I am at all times. And I see this blue star moving from north to south. And I thought, well, gosh, what could that be? You know, maybe the Skylab. And then suddenly it stopped in midair.
Whoa.
And does a complete reverse back to the north. So I jumped up, I laid my guitar down on the log there, and I dragged my brother out. You know, he's tall like me. I'm 6'3", he's 6'2". I dragged him out of the tent and woke him up and said, look at that. And I just pointed his head towards the sky. And I said, what do you think that is? And he says, the Skylab, they said it could be seen, you know, in the sky. And I looked at him and I said, Charlie, the Skylab is white. It's painted white. How is it going to appear blue? Look at that. That looks like a blue star. And he says, it's the Skylab. And he crawled back into the tent. And I sat back down on the log, and I'm looking around, and I couldn't see the blue star. So I picked up my guitar, and I started strumming again. And a few minutes goes by, and then suddenly I see over these tall southern pines. Anyone who's been to southern Mississippi, they know that these southern pine trees are 80 to 100 feet tall.
Yep.
And it's way off in the distance, in the area of where the Saturn missile project is, which is top secret, by the way, down there in southern Mississippi. It was back in those days, anyway. And I see the same blue light, except now it's an orb about the size of a Volkswagen with this blue light just emanating from this object for just hundreds of feet around it. But in the very center, you could see that it was an orb. And it's moving on the top of these oak or pine trees, headed right towards me. And I'm thinking, look at that. Is that blue star that I just saw a few minutes ago? And suddenly, I'm thinking, why are those little children playing in those trees? Don't they know that if they fall, you know, they're going to get hurt? That's 80 or 100 feet up. And I'm thinking, little children in the trees. In fact, that's the chapter to this area of my life in the book. It's called Children in the Trees. The next thing I remember is it's dawn. The fire has smoldered down to just black smoldering coal and smoke. My sister-in-law is coming out of the tent yawning and looking at me saying, well, where's the coffee, caveman? And I looked and I'm thinking, now wait a minute. It was just a moment ago, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, pitch black, and there was this blue thing above the trees, and there was something about children, children in the trees. And I looked over, my guitar was leaned against the log that I'm sitting on, and I thought, this is very strange. It was almost as if, you know, someone had just conked me on the head and I woke up. Well, as time went on, I was contacted by a lot of people because the very next day it was reported that down in Pascagoula, Mississippi, which was only about 40 miles away to the south, these two fishermen had claimed that they had been taken aboard a UFO. You may remember the story.
Oh,
Charles Hickson and Calvin, or Kevin, can't remember his last name, Parker, I think. They called them the two fishermen from Pascagoula, Mississippi. They claimed they were taken on board a UFO by these robotic aliens and that it was a blue spaceship.
Wow.
Now, they went on national news. They were interviewed by the FBI. They were put under hypnosis for weeks and months and everything. It was worldwide news back in the early 70s, 72, 73, when all of this happened. And I'm seeing it on the news once we got back to New Orleans, because this was a three-day camping trip on the weekend when all this occurred. I saw this, which would have been early Sunday morning at 3 a.m. What happened to them happened just before dawn, around 4:30 to 5 in the morning, a couple of hours later.
Prophecy Keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And I'm pointing to the TV news. On Monday morning, they're making a national report about these two fishermen, and I'm telling my wife, Paulette, I said, "Look, Paulette, they're saying it's a blue flying saucer, just like that blue star that I saw and told my brother about." And of course, I called my brother, and I said, "Watch the news. You know, remember that blue star I pointed out to you? These two hick fishermen, you know," and they were hicks, you know, to be honest with you. They claimed that it was a UFO and they were taken aboard by these robotic alien type people, and they were screened and tested and put before this big electronic eye, as this one guy described it, the older fellow, Charles Hickman. Well, the younger fellow, Calvin, I think he was about 19 or 20 at the time, ended up in an asylum. I mean, this story just drove him completely out of it. And Charles went on to do a lot of interviews, and he wrote a book, and then he eventually passed away from some strange form of cancer.
Wow.
But that was the closest encounter I'd had to a UFO until 1995, June the 1st, when this gigantic, and I say gigantic, yellowish UFO, it looked like a gigantic jellyfish in the north-northwestern sky, was seen by tens of thousands of people in the Fort Worth area and all the way down here to Cleburne. I'm about 25 to 30 miles south of Fort Worth. And people were calling into the news stations, and the news stations were reporting it was a weather balloon. And I thought, gosh, shades of Roswell all over again. Well, I got out my camcorder and got about 8.5 minutes of this thing. And in studying the video, which I passed on to Professor Jack Kasher up there in Omaha at the University of Nebraska, one of the leading physicists, and he analyzed it, and what we see are three smaller ships coming, I call them little zippers, because they zip out in formation from this gigantic jellyfish-looking orb. And one zips down, and then it curls and zips upwards. Now, just think about that for a moment, Otter. Space debris falls to the Earth, usually at sort of an angle, about a 90-degree angle, and then they usually pop and explode way above the ground level. And even any sort of, meteorites, if you will, they do the same thing. They fall to Earth either straight down or at an angle, but they never fall or curl upwards. And, of course, this is all on the video, and you can see it frame by frame. There's 30 seconds or 30 frames per second on video, and you can see they occupy about 3 frames. That's 3 frames out of 30, which means 3/30ths of a second.
Wow.
So that's very quick. This, yep. That's incredibly fast. It just boggles the mind to think how fast that could possibly be. And yet we have the crescent moon in the left side of the frame as a fixed object. Okay, so we know the size of the moon and the crescent moon and all of that. And other star constellations can be seen for reference. But then, 10 days later, came the broad daylight UFO, which made world news that I was fortunate enough to videotape.
Wow.
This came the morning after a tornado wiped out the whole southern half of Cleburne, Texas, just causing millions of dollars worth of damage, just leveled everything, houses, businesses, everything, and left 7 inches of water in 10 minutes time, 7 inches of rain. Just imagine that, 7 inches of rain within an hour.
Wow.
So it flooded the streets, and my girlfriend worked for the city at the time, and she asked me to take my camcorder around and get footage of the destruction, which I did. I got there before the news people did from Dallas and Fort Worth. Then I thought, well, I'm going to go out to the lake and get some footage to see how flooded the lake is. Well, I'm out there at the lake on an area that's raised up, and it's sort of a turnaround for cars. They call it the Point. And I'm sitting there facing the due west. I have a compass on my dashboard. Like I say, I'm a direction freak. That's the title of my album, by the way, Directions, which has an ambiguous meaning. But I'm sitting there, and suddenly I'm getting footage of all of this flooded water. I hear in the back of my head, hey, look up here. And I looked in front of me, and right out over the lake, about 100 feet above the lake, is a classical-looking flying saucer. Gray, metallic flying saucer with grid lines all over it, and it's rotating very slowly clockwise, and it's hovering sort of just back and forth and woggling, if you will, about 100 feet over the water. And I noticed that a shadow was cast down on the lake. So I realized this has to be a solid object, you know, first and foremost. But my jaw is hitting the floorboard of my Jeep. You know, I am just in complete and total awe because there are no hills around here. This is prairie country. This is dairy farm country, pastures and prairie, no hills. Couldn't have been a hang glider, couldn't have been a helicopter, couldn't have been dozens of things, you know, until I realized what it was, and what it was something not of this earth.
I'm sitting here, I'm awed too, so I normally talk more than this, but that's why I'm so quiet, so please continue.
Okay, I surely will. It's a fascinating story. Just to relive it is a fascination for me as well. Well, I'm sitting there, and the camcorder is just in my lap, you know, because I am so awed. And yet, you must remember, I used to be a professional news photographer. I worked for ABC News and PBS and independent news stations down in New Orleans as an E&G photographer. I photographed murders, wrecks, bank robberies, you know, any blood and gore you can imagine, I videoed as a news photographer, and I was also an editor and a director. So I know about these things, and I know how not to be awed and to get footage of like a shootout at a bank, you know, dodging bullets, and I got that camera on my shoulder trying to get footage of it. But this is different. This is something from another world or another dimension. You know, I even thought of that. Well, then it suddenly starts drifting toward the north, northwest, just over the treetops and out of my sight. So I started the engine of the Jeep, whipped it in gear, spun around, you know, doing a fishtail. You know, I was really, really into this. And there was nobody out at the lake, I might add. Because why would people go out to the lake the morning after a tornado hit? The tornado hit around 4 in the morning, and this was in the afternoon, just right after 1:20 in the p.m. So if the lake is flooded, no one's going to go bring their boats out there to go boating or fishing or anything like that, because they're going to think all the roads are washed out, you know, and this and that. And I was fortunate enough to have a four-wheel drive Jeep. So I braved it on out there. Well, I put it in gear, fishtailed around, and went down the road, which leads right beside the lake. And then I saw this thing slowly traveling towards this cow pasture. And I stopped at a fork in the road and got some footage as it turned up on its side, completely vertical.
Oh.
And I saw the top part of it, which was like a hump, like a mushroom, okay? If you can imagine a mushroom and the hump on top, that's what I saw. So it's completely on its side, vertical. And you can just see that it's so obviously spinning clockwise, very, very fluidly, very slowly, you know, a lot slower than you would have thought. I would have thought it would have been spinning so fast, you know, like a top or something. But it was just a very, very slow and fluid motion. And then it tilts back up on its side and slowly starts cruising towards the north. And then from out of nowhere, there was otherwise a cloudless sky, Otter. It was a blue sky, sun was shining, it was 84 degrees. I checked all of the weather reports. It was a 17-mile-per-hour wind out of the south-southwest. I've got all the details on the website under what's called the UFO report, the official UFO report. I have the time log of the video and all of the various information, the documented facts. I also called it the factual findings of the entire sighting. That's all posted on the website. Well, suddenly, this object zips in just a matter of a second off to this darkened cloud in the due north-northwest that appeared out of nowhere, because it's the only cloud in the sky. And it happened to be one of those bluish-black clouds, the real thick black cloud.
Yeah.
It zipped into that, and I paused the camera, and I thought, oh, gosh, that's all? You know, I got about a minute of footage, and this is a world-shaking event here. This is a broad daylight UFO. This isn't some twinkling lights in the night sky. You know, this isn't something that, you know, could be considered a weather balloon. You know, it had portholes, you like, know, along the rim.
Almost like a Billy Meyer, you know, close-up.
Wasn't anything at all like I've seen some of Billy Meyer's photos and drawings, etc. Wasn't anything like that. It looked a lot like, if you've seen the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, it looked almost exactly like that one, except along the rim you can see these portholes. Now, we have a freeze frame of the object on the website, and we blew it up 100%, okay? And you can see, some people count 4 portholes, some people count 5. It just depends. Now you can get out a magnifying glass, or you can just look at the blow-up yourself, and you can obviously see the portholes. And it's an obvious flying saucer. It is not a plane, it's not a hang glider, it's not anything other than what it is. And what it is some sort of vehicle from another world or another dimension. Well, I paused the camera when this thing zipped into the darkened cloud, and I thought to myself, is that all? You know, I wish this thing would come back and do some sort of maneuvers, like glide around a fixed object so I could get a bearing and we could determine the size of it. You know, we know that telephone poles in Texas are measured 30 feet. Okay, they bury them so they will be exactly 30 feet from the top to the ground. I knew that much, okay? And there was a two-story house in the distance, and as soon as I thought that, I looked up at the cloud, and the object is coming in complete reverse of its entry out of the darkened cloud. So I unpaused the camera, pointed it up at the cloud, and you see in the footage, it's coming out of the cloud, and then it just drops down, slowly drops down to the cow pasture, and then it starts making slow, woggling maneuvers. And Otter, it was moving so slow that if it had have been a helicopter, a hang glider, an airplane, any form of earthly craft, it would have fallen from the sky.
Right.
That's how slow this thing was moving. And then finally, it approaches a two-story house. Now, we know that two-story houses are X amount of feet tall,
right,
and it had a brick chimney. We know that bricks are, what, 6-7 inches long,
mm-hmm,
2.5 inches wide, you know, so all of this can be measured. It did exactly what I wanted it to do. It gave me a reference, not just me, but other researchers who you know, want to dissect the footage and determine the size of the craft. So it slowly approaches this two-story house, and then we see it gets about midway on the top side of the house, and it stops, it woggles back and forth, and then it slowly descends behind the house. And I thought, that's it. It's going to land right there in the cow pasture. This isn't the White House lawn, you know. This isn't California. This isn't Illinois. This isn't Dakota. This isn't anywhere but Cleburne, Texas, of all places. And this ship from another world is going to land in this cow pasture. And I'm the guy whose job it is to get the footage of it. So I crammed the Jeep in the first gear and spun out, you know, down the road, and I was ready to crash through the cattle gate to get into that pasture and to get the footage of this thing landing when I slammed on the brakes right at the gate, and I saw that it's hovering about 80 feet above 4 or 5 Hereford cows. And they're acting strange. They're sort of like those toys they call bobheads.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's like their bodies are completely stiff, but their heads are just sort of, you know, like jerking around. And I thought, man, that is strange. And the whole time, the camcorder's sitting in my lap, and I'm just awed. I'm thinking, look at those cows. They almost look like bobheads, you know, bobbleheads or whatever they call it. And the UFO is right above them, just sort of woggling back and forth real, real slowly. Well, then I thought, camcorder. So I picked it up and I turned on the record button and I got footage of it, and as soon as I did, it starts slowly moving right over the treetops, and we see the footage. It moves through, you know, right through the trees, so there's another fixed object, you know. I went back and measured the tree later on. It was 27 feet tall. So that's a fixed object. That's a reference. And then it did something amazing, just totally amazing. It stopped, it hovered there back and forth, and then in the back of my mind, it says, what is your name? But it's my voice,
uh-huh,
you know, like your voice in your head, Otter. It's my voice saying, what is your name? And I'm thinking, why am I asking myself my name? So I said, Jason Grey Wolf Lee. And then my voice says, what does it mean? And I said, Jason means the healer, and Grey Wolf is my Native American name. And then in my mind, suddenly, it was almost like the history of the Cheyenne just flashed through my mind in an instant. And we're doing cliff dwellings, and we're hunting buffalo, and we're painting stories on stone, you know. We're sitting by campfires, and we're in teepees, and it was just flashing so fast. And then finally it said, and what does the last one mean? Well, Lee, L-E-I-G-H, is an Irish name, which means a peaceful meadow. And that's what I said in my mind. I said, it means a peaceful meadow. And it wavers back and forth, and then suddenly it zips to such a small size that it got down to about the size of a twinkling star in broad daylight, by the way, and then it was gone. and you see that on the video. It's just there, and then it gets so small, so fast, and then it's not there. All within 20 frames, 30 frames per second.
That is incredible.
So that's 20 twentieths of a second.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Later that afternoon, I showed the video to my girlfriend and to a few other friends, and they were just totally blown away. Just totally blown away. And nobody asked me, "How did you do that?" You know, no one asked any of that. They were just mystified. My girlfriend thought it was Armageddon. Okay, she thought it was the end of the world, especially 10 days earlier, the nighttime sighting, because I had gone out to look at this in the driveway. I thought I was out there for a couple of minutes. She later told me I was out there 20 minutes watching this thing in complete awe. And then it eventually came right over our house. It was about the size of the New Orleans Superdome. Well, I'm talking a gigantic mothership. And then it turned on its side as well and zips back up into the north-northwest, which, as it turned out, was 20-odd miles away. And I have colored pencil drawings of that on the website as well. Because, as I mentioned on the website, at that point, that day, that very day of June the 1st of the nighttime sighting, I had to go into Fort Worth to buy a new camcorder battery. And it was charging. The new battery was charging in my charger over at my house. And I was at my girlfriend's house when this sighting occurred. And then I realized, I have to go home and get my camcorder and get footage of this. Well, it only had, I got about 8.5 minutes of footage, and then the battery died. And that's of the June the 1st nighttime footage. But then the June the 11th broad daylight footage is just awesome. I mean, and then I did the footwork. I went to the airport. We have a small private airplane airport here. I looked physically looked at the flight log and talked to the man there. No planes in the area at the time. None at all. Okay, no chrome biplanes, you know, nothing that could even remotely appear to be this object. Then I called the FAA in Fort Worth, and since I have an FCC license, I gave my FCC license number, and they considered me a credible person. I spoke with the operations manager himself, and he told me there was something on the radar, but it was not any known aircraft. He told me that.
Wow.
And I tape recorded it, by the way. I had one of those little suction cup microphones that I put on the telephone and recorded it. And then I said, well, you know, the TV news people, they're calling the thing from June the 1st a weather balloon. And he laughs and he says, well, that doesn't make sense to me because I really don't think they launch weather balloons until the fall, you know. He says, but you might want to look into that. And I said, yeah, I will. So I did. I went to the library, and I discovered that here in North Texas, the jet stream winds only prevail in September, October, November. Now, this was June. So why are they saying on the network TV channels that it was a weather balloon? Well, then I found out there's only one national balloon weather base in the state of Texas, in Palestine, Texas. Strange name, right? Mm-hmm. I called them. I spoke with Jim Turner. Okay, I got his permission. I recorded our conversation. I asked him if I could record it, you know, because I told him I was a journalist. I was researching this report that it was a weather balloon. And he said, what? What weather balloon? What are you talking about? I said, well, over the weekend, they were reporting that that huge thing in the sky was a weather balloon. He said, oh, well, I was on a fishing trip, but no, we didn't launch a weather balloon. We can't launch a weather balloon unless I'm here. I'm the operations manager. And I said, oh, really? Is that right? And he says, well, besides, we don't launch weather balloons in the summertime. The jet stream winds are up in North Dakota and around the Canadian border, so there would be no reason to launch a weather balloon. And then I went to the library and read up on weather balloons. Why do they launch them? What is the purpose of a weather balloon, Otter? And I found out, you know, to measure the jet stream winds, which are 3 to 5 miles above ground level, okay, and they're anywhere from 100 to 200 to 300 miles per hour. They measure the barometric pressure, the direction of the wind, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the moisture in the air. You know, there's a lot of reasons why they send weather balloons up to the jet stream. But when the jet stream isn't in Texas in June, why would they report that on the TV news? Another Roswell.
Yeah.
So all of that information is on the website, and including Mr. Turner, he invited me out. This is an amazing thing, Otter. He said, why don't you come out, bring your camcorder, we're having a launch, a test launch, and I'll show you how we do that. We're going to launch this balloon, and we're going to retrieve it down in Waco, which was about 65 miles to the south. We're going to retrieve it in Waco, and I'll show you how we retrieve it with a three-man helicopter. It's all retrieved in a helicopter, you know, and it's a 1,600-pound payload with, you know, all these instrumentations on it, and it costs right at $1 million.
Wow.
He says, and I'll show you how all of that works if you're writing a story about it. And I said, sure. He said, well, just call me tomorrow, and we'll make arrangements. I called the next day, and as we were talking, about 20 seconds into the conversation, the line suddenly went dead, and a lady's voice came in, and she said that she was the public affairs information officer and that I could no longer speak with Mr. Turner, and who was I, and what was my press pass number.
Oh, my gosh. They were listening to you guys.
Yes. So I never got to speak to Mr. Turner again.
Public affairs, my too.
Yeah. But we must remember, originally, he gave me permission to use his name, and he also agreed to be tape recorded. I took that tape recording to the newspapers.
And at what point was it that she broke in? What had you asked her?
Well, I had called him. It was the second call, okay, because he told me to call back, and he'd give me directions to get to the balloon base, which is, it's about, 80 miles from where I live. And he was going to tell me how to get there, and I could bring a camcorder and videotape their test flight Okay. And they were going to launch and then retrieve in Waco. And he even invited me to ride in the helicopter. I mean, imagine that. I mean, he actually thought I was, I told him I was a freelance writer, which technically I am. You know, I am. Or I'm a published writer. And I have written articles for newspapers, you know. So, you know, I did not lie to the man. I am a freelance writer.
Right.
But what he didn't know was I had videotaped a UFO, you know, that they were calling a weather balloon. And what my idea was to prove that it was not a weather balloon. And what better way to prove it than to go to the horse's mouth? And the horse's mouth said it wasn't a weather balloon because we didn't launch it. I was on a fishing trip, you know?
Wow.
So I brought the recording of our conversation to the newspapers, and oh, man, they just couldn't believe it. But it was the second call to him to get the instructions, and he was telling me, well, okay, you come up Highway 180, and we'd about 20 seconds into the conversation, and then suddenly the line just goes, and then this woman's voice comes in saying that she's the information officer for public affairs, and that any information I needed from then on would have to go through her, and I could no longer speak with Mr. Turner. And then she said, please give me your name and your press pass number. And I told her, no thank you, ma'am. I've already found out all I need to know. And then I hung up.
That's
on the recording as well.
That's absolutely incredible.
Isn't it?
What an incredible story. Well, I see you had, you know, like over a million visitors. Well, I guess they stopped counting at a million visitors, or was it? Was it more than that on your website?
Oh, it's more than that.
Yeah.
We usually average about anywhere from 800 to 1,000 hits a week. When I do radio shows such as yours, it increases, you know, naturally, because people are fascinated by this. It's the one UFO story, well, there's about four, maybe five, that are considered undisputed. Including, if you recall, the granddaddy of all debunkers, Philip Klass, the elderly man who writes for Aviation Magazine. I sent him a copy, okay, of the video, the broad daylight UFO, and asked him for his opinion. You know, what do you think it is, Mr. Klass? He never wrote me back. Then I sent him another letter, a registered mail, so he had to sign for it, and he did. And I asked him, well, if you won't discuss this, can you deny or can you comply? Never heard a word from him. He went on a radio show, and he did mention that my video, he mentioned my video, and he called me by name. I think it was Art Bell, I think he was on. He said the only impressive broad daylight footage he had ever seen. He said, but even then, he says, it could be anything. Well, how could it be anything? I sent him all of the data, the factual findings, a transcript of my conversation with Mr. Turner from the balloon base, you know, and I sent him newspaper articles and the whole package that I sent him, and I also sent a package to the White House with a copy of the video. I also sent a copy to NASA, okay, at the Johnson Space Lab, because I used to work for NASA. And I have NASA IDs. All of that can be seen on my website. People can see that by going to the, you'll see Jason's bio. Just click on that. And down at the bottom, you'll see Jason's NASA IDs. You click on that, and you can see my NASA training certificate and my ID cards to prove that I did, in fact, work for NASA. So, didn't hear a word from the White House, naturally. Didn't hear a word from NASA, naturally. Didn't hear a word from Philip Klass. But then I've been on Jeff Rentz. I was on Art Bell for about 30 seconds when I had to conclude the interview. He did not stick to what we had agreed to. And the agreement was we were not going to make this a silly interview. We were going to make this a serious interview, and he tried to make it silly. And
what year was that?
Oh gosh, that was 97. Yeah, 97.
Wow, I'm really surprised.
I had sent him a copy of the video and all of the papers, you know, and of course by that time the website was up with all of the information. And the first email I got from him and Keith Rowland, I believe is his webmaster's name, I spoke with him on the phone a lot of times. He and I actually became friends over the phone, you know, Art Bell's webmaster. And it was partly due to him that I was invited to be on the show. Well, just prior to me being on the show, Art Bell had this guy who claimed to have ghosts in his house and who claimed to be a vampire. You know, now how can I follow that? You know, it's like the Beatles following Bob Dylan. It just doesn't work that well, you know, or something. I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but I did not want to follow a guy claiming to be a vampire. You know,
yeah.
If we're going to talk about the UFO and we're going to talk about my God-given gift of prophecy, I do not want to be on the same show with a guy claiming to be a vampire.
Right.
So, you see, all of that was just not what we had agreed upon. And I said, Mr. Bell, this is not what we agreed upon. And unless, you know, we can get back to what we'd agreed upon, as far as I'm concerned, this interview is terminated. And then he said, oh, yeah? And I went, click, and I hung up. And then, of course, I'm listening to it on my little portable radio, and he's telling people, oh, we must have gotten disconnected. We'll try to call him back. And, of course, he didn't try to call me back.
That really surprises me about him. You know, him supposedly being a big UFO advocate, and that was 97, and he was a big UFO advocate then.
Oh, yes.
It makes you wonder.
It does. And this was just 97. That was only a year or two before he did, his first retirement. He's had, like, three retirements, I think.
That was the year the Hopi Elders went on with Robert Ghostwolf.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, I've listened to Robert Ghostwolf on his show quite a number of times, and he's been on Jeff Rentz as well, and on your show.
Wow.
I found it just completely amazing.
Robert's a partner here. I mean, we're just partners.
I see.
A lot of people really don't know that. We're just, you know, he's just kind of the silent partner here, and it's a joint, you know, it's a partnership what we're doing here, not a business arrangement. We work together closely, and that was really interesting. I'll let everybody draw their conclusions about what happened there. Kind of makes you wonder.
Well,
because I started listening to Art Bell back in 92, something like that. And, he was talking about UFOs, but why would he why would he marginalize yours? That's really fascinating.
I really don't know. And right now I'm looking at the colored pencil drawings, which I also sent copies to Mr. Bell. Big blow-ups, you know, 11 by 14s or whatever they are. And this is pretty impressive stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It really is. And, of course, the video, I mean, anybody can draw a colored pencil drawing and say, you know, whatever, but when it coincides with the video, that's, you know, something completely different. And I'm a honorably discharged disabled veteran, Vietnam era, registered voter, you know, never had any problems with the police, so it wasn't like I was a questionable character even, you know. It's just that he did not choose to stick to a serious format, and I just did not want to be a part of a comedy.
That's amazing.
And as it turned out, it was only like the following year he retired and sold out, you know, and to Coast to Coast, I believe he started calling it. At one time, you know, it was just the Art Bell Show.
Yeah.
While
he called it Dreamland, and
that's right. That's right. But I still listened to his show, and, you know, I was still a fan, you know, and, you know, that's no problem. But, the problem, which you are well aware of, with people like Art Bell or Jeff Rentz, who's a wonderful man, Jeff Rentz, just a wonderful guy. I really love Jeff Rentz. And this Canadian guy, the X-Zone, Rob McConnell up there, and any other of these major radio station-type places, you know, they have complete control, Otter, you know.
Sure.
They can say whatever they want. They can say, oh, there was a disconnection, and we'll try to call him back. And then they come back and say, well, we've been trying and trying, but he's not answering the phone. Well, the phone didn't ring, you know. And that was the truth of the matter.
Well,
the public, can't have our own radio station and go back and say, well, you know, Art Bell really didn't call back, you know.
Well, he could have bleeped out what you said, you know, and nobody would have known.
That's right. That's right. But needless to say, I was never invited back, and I probably never will be.
Have you ever approached George Norrie?
Yes. You know, that's an amazing thing because, let's see, oh gosh, mental block. The gentleman with the Mars Sidonia.
Oh, Richard Hoagland.
Richard Hoagland, yeah, how could I forget him? He was on this new show, and he had mentioned several people had called in and sent emails asking Mr. Hoagland why he didn't have Jason Lee on and debate Jason Lee.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The Trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And he said on three different shows that he would love to have me on the show with him and debate him. And this guy, did you say his name is Noonan?
Oh, George Norrie.
Norrie. He said, well, we'll get in touch with Jason Lee and we'll have him on the show. I've never been contacted by the gentleman.
Uh-huh.
And my website has, you know, been online since 1996. Easy to find.
Do you want his producer's telephone number?
No, I really don't want to call them. If they want to call me, fine. But what bothers me is I'm getting dozens of emails from people saying they just heard, you know, on the Art Bell show that Richard Hoagland has agreed to debate you. When are you going to be on the show? And I tell them I didn't hear anything about it. You know, yeah. Nobody's contacted me. And the reason is, Richard Hoagland made a prediction about the Pathfinder mission. Remember that?
Uh-huh.
The little skateboard to Mars?
Yep.
Okay, he made a prediction that it was going to crash and that it would be a complete failure and that it was all a conspiracy to bilk the American public out of taxpayer money. Now, I counter-predicted that it would be a successful landing. In fact, it would be the most successful landing NASA has ever experienced in the history of National Aeronautics. And I posted that on the Art Bell chat room, you know, the forum, and I also posted it on Richard Hoagland's Enterprise website, and just hundreds of people started, you know, hitting on it and writing back and posting this and that, you know, well, how can you possibly go against Mr. Hoagland? He's so well-informed and this and that and everything else. And I had to explain to him, I am a clairvoyant. I saw this thing in my mind landing safely, and it would be a complete and total success. And to this day, NASA considers the Pathfinder mission its grandest success, second only to the moon landing.
Wow. Wow.
Now, why Richard wants to debate me, I really can't answer that. Why would he, when he went on record, and I heard it that night and also taped it, you know, my little cassette player in my boombox, I taped the show where he says it's, you know, going to be a disaster, it's going to crash, and it's just a taxpayer bilking. They're just ripping us off, you know, and it's a big covert act, you know, oh, he was just going on and on about this conspiracy theory stuff.
Yeah.
It just, you know, totally amazed me. Well, then when it happens, you know, and it's a complete and total success, we don't hear from Richard Hoagland for a few weeks. And then he goes back on the show, and of course he said, well, apparently, you know, my contacts were wrong, and he, what, passes the buck. You know, blames it on other people. So I lose a lot of respect for Richard C. Hoagland at that point. And I had bought his book. I bought two or three of his lecture tapes. I mean, I was a fan of the guy, you know. But then when somebody does something like that, they pass the buck or they blame other people for their mistakes, I have no respect for them.
Yeah. Nobody's perfect. You know, the higher you are, you know, the lower you can fall.
That is correct. That is correct.
Pride, you know, pride goeth before the fall.
Well put. Well put.
Yeah, pride always precedes the fall. So, well, one of these days when he's willing to face up the fact that, you know, he shortchanged you. Oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. But, nah, nobody's perfect.
That's right. And,
and you know, but your message needs to get out. I mean, they're talking all the time about, you know, information, you know, that needs to get out. And but, you know, why suppress yours? And it looks for all the world like that. I mean, any idiot can see they're suppressing yours.
Right. And bear in mind, when the Pathfinder landed, it was scheduled to land on the 4th of July, Independence Day. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, the posts I was making was July the 1st. You know, 3 days before it happened.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that documented proof of a clairvoyant prediction coming true?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, guess what? After the Pathfinder landing, and there were hundreds, and I'll repeat, hundreds of people on that forum, or that chat room, if you will, who made comments, you know, well, we'll wait and see, Mr. Lee, you know, we'll just wait when July the 4th comes and we'll see who's right, you or Mr. Hoagland, blah, 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 blah. 2 days later, all of the posts on the Art Bell website were removed. All of the posts and the comments on the Richard C. Hoagland forum were removed, erased, deleted, done away with.
Did you ever by chance get like a PDF copy of the original? Or
yes.
A screenshot of the original.
Yes.
That's always the thing to do in defense of yourself, because those are time stamped, and you when you make a PDF file, if you have the software to do it, like, you know, usually Word will do it with the Adobe plugin, and well, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I made copies of almost each and every post. Okay, and it came out as HTML. In other words, their design, and it was Keith Hoagland. Keith Rowland. He was the webmaster. It was all his design. You know, you can see it's his design.
Yeah.
His name is on the copyright, you know, and all of that. So I made copies of each page, and I still have them to this day, you know,
yeah.
Floppy disk.
Yeah, if you had made a screenshot, which is like a photograph, HTML, anybody can go in and mess with the code. But if in the future something like this happens again, get in touch with me and I'll show you how to. Because people don't know this, you can get screenshot software that will actually take a picture of a page, or you can make a portable document file of an HTML file. But I can go on anybody's website and make a copy of any page, and then go into the code and make any changes and. And too bad, but people don't know about that. It's too bad you didn't know it at the time. And
one of them did that, but some of the ads didn't show up. You know, they had that broken little icon.
Yeah.
And it was just like an empty square. I thought that was a screenshot, but I guess it wasn't, huh? Because I know nothing of these things. I am not a webmaster. I have a webmaster.
Well, I wish, in the future, you know, I had to do this back when, I had to learn how to do this back when I was a former employer disputed an unemployment claim.
Uh-huh.
And because I had made a copy of, he said that I never sent this letter in. I told him that I quit, and I quit for cause because he was using profanity and discriminating against me, which was quitting for cause, and for good cause legally, and he tried to say that he never received the letter. Well, I was able to produce a copy of it showing that, and I sent them a copy of it, and they could see that that letter had been opened and closed once, and it was on the date that I said it had been created on. And because you can tell the timestamp just by putting your arrow on the file and right clicking on it.
Uh-huh.
And there's ways you have to kind of learn to defend yourself sometimes. And I've heard other people talk about this kind of stuff and. It really makes you kind of wonder exactly what happened. It makes you wonder if it's pride involved or if they are, as some people suspect, on somebody else's payroll. You know,
right? Greed.
This is I'm talking about disinformation.
Oh, okay. Well, how about the disclosure? Excuse me. Project.
Yeah.
Okay. My broad daylight footage is in the original video that this doctor, what's his name? I forget his name now. I recently had an operation, so I'm on a blood thinner, and it makes my mind a little light.
Well, when you hit 40, that's what makes your mind
light. Yeah.
it's called a brain.
But yes, that's right.
You know, we're both over 50, so that's okay.
Natural gas of the brain.
Right, right.
Well,
brain propane.
Without my express permission, and by the way, my UFO video is copyrighted.
Good.
It, being a songwriter and a published author, I know how to copyright things, okay? And I copyrighted the video before I even went to a newspaper. I sent it registered mail to the copyright office, and before I went to the TV news, and all three of the major networks aired the footage, and even Fox, CNN as well. And I did two or three different talk shows. It was on sightings, unsolved mysteries, you know. Well, it ends up in his video that he was selling, the proceeds of which would go towards this disclosure project to force Congress into releasing all of the government blacked out information about not only Roswell, but all UFO information that they have. Well, that's a violation or an infringement of copyright.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Unless you gave him permission.
Yes. And his partner, who also was an attorney, I corresponded with both of them. And there's a link on my website. Hold on. Let's see if I... it's still up.
Did he use the video with attribution?
If you go to my homepage, jasonlee.org, there are three columns of menus. It's on the far right column, right below announcements. It's the third mention. It said, read Jason's disclosure project oversteps bounds at, and you'll see the article posted at ufocity.com, rents.com, ufoforce.com, and of course my own letter to that effect.
UFOCity.com link, or yeah, okay, I'm on it.
Okay, yeah, you see that?
I'm on it.
Okay.
Actually, the UFO City link isn't working anymore, so we'll try the rents.com link. There it is. Ed Mitchell most unhappy with Greer using his name as disclosure witness.
Okay, scan towards the bottom of that, and you'll see the part about my footage being used without my permission.
Right. Comment, disclosure project oversteps bounds from Jason Lee, 514-1 to all. First, thanks to Dan at UFO Zone for sending me this article. And so, yeah, did they attribute it to you, though? Did they give you credit for it?
No. No. You see, that was the problem. And I know people up in Roswell who bought that video. I have a very good friend who bought that video, which, you know, of course, I obtained a copy of. And if I really wanted to, I could have taken them to court and sued them for copyright infringement.
Yeah, I haven't seen the video yet, but do you have it branded with your name across it?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Did they remove the brand?
Yes.
Black it out. Oh, yeah, that's bad.
That's very bad.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, throughout the bottom it says copyright 1995 by Jason Lee, all throughout the video at the bottom of it, and then at the end of it, there's a little screen that says filmed in Cleburne, Texas at Lake Pat Cleburne, blah, 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 copyright, blah, blah, blah. They even give the copyright number.
Dirty pool.
I mean, is that dirty pool? Yeah.
That's a big mistake.
So they blacked it out and they showed the footage, just, you know, 20 or 30 seconds of it, according to this doctor. He sent me two or three different emails, and he was profane, you know, in the very beginning. You know, how dare you accuse me of, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then I mentioned it to him, you know, hey, well, wait a minute. I have a copy of it here. And then finally he wrote me back and he says, oh, yes, okay, we just saw it, and we're going to take it out of the video. So the next edition, it will not be in the video, and you lose, pal.
Well, you lost to begin with.
Yeah, well, and wait a minute. I lose? How do I lose? You know? I had a lot of critics. A lot of critics told me, hey, your video doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the world.
Well, not to her.
And I tell them, wait a minute. The world didn't shoot the video. I did.
Well, yeah. Who told you lose?
He did. The doctor guy. He said, I lose because they were going to take the footage out of the next edition of the video that they were selling, by the way.
Who told you that?
This doctor guy.
Oh, okay.
Whatever his name is.
Dr. Stephen Greer.
Stephen Greer, that's him.
Yeah.
I forgot his name. Stephen Greer. He sent me I kept the emails.
Oh,
I have the emails.
Man.
And even one from his lawyer, you know, pleading with me not to sue.
Oh, have you still got that letter?
Pardon me?
You still got that letter?
Oh, yeah, I got all of them. I keep everything.
Oh, man, you ought to sue. You get a letter. You get a lawyer pleading with you not to sue. It's like, oh, man.
Well, but then I went on radio talk shows, and people were calling in, and they were saying, you know, well, your footage belongs to the world, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, well, the world didn't buy the camcorder. I did. The world didn't buy the blank film. I did. You know, the world wasn't out at the lake. I was, you know, so I copyrighted it. Okay, I haven't charged anybody for it. When Unsolved Mysteries sent me a check, I sent the check to the food bank for homeless people. When Sightings sent me a check, I endorsed it and sent it to the police fund here in Cleburne. So I've not made a dime on this, you know, apart from selling my book, which only mentions the UFOs in one chapter. It's really about my God-given gift of ESP and clairvoyancy.
Well, they're probably not real well funded, and if you sued them, you probably would have wiped them out. But
that's right. And people were saying you should be proud that they selected your video to help, you know, them get Congress to release all of this information and everything like that. And my response was, well, yes, I'm proud of that, but they could have asked. All they had to do was call me or send me a letter and ask me if they could include my footage in their video, which, by the way, they were selling at a profit, okay, to what they had formed as a non-profit organization.
Right.
But then it was discovered that Stephen Greer, okay, this doctor, Stephen Greer, went out and bought a brand new Mercedes. He lived in a $1 million home. Now, where did all of this money come from? You know, all of this money that was supposed to go into a non-profit org for the disclosure project suddenly ends in people's pockets that are involved in all of this.
Well, you know, you can have a non-profit, and you know, you can have an $80,000. You know, there was a case recently about a scandal down in Texas about, as a matter of fact, SPCA.org, about the guy that was running that. He was really lying to the local judges and getting them to get warrants and seizing people's animals and then selling them. And this guy had an $80,000 salary and
really?
Plus perks. So I guess it was 48 hours. One of the news magazines did a show that they sent in a cameraman under a vet undercover as a cameraman, and the guy didn't know it.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Uh huh.
I remember.
And I mean, this is real abuse. And you know, there's my degree area was in nonprofit agency administration, youth leadership, and you darn right there can be abuses. You know, any organization that's depending on situation, you know, they shouldn't be using, you know, 90 to 95% for overhead. It should be around 50%.
That's right.
And
that's
right.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now, folks, I won't kid you. Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Sure.
So, but yeah, you know, it's all a matter of, you know, whatever your conscience will bear. And
That's right. And these people must have a bottomless pit of a conscience.
Yeah.
Because I had friends in Roswell who went to the lecture that Stephen Greer and all those other guys on the panel held or conducted, and it was $35 at the door a person, and they had a big screen there in which my footage and other footage was shown to this audience. Okay? Now that is a violation of copyright right there again. Okay? Because it was a public performance. Whenever you charge a fee and you show otherwise copyrighted footage like that, it's considered a public performance.
Yep.
And the copyright owner should be given a residual. Well, they didn't even give me screen credit. They blacked out my name, you know, and I'm thinking, if I'm sitting in the audience, I'm wondering, why did they do that? Why is there that big black line across the bottom of the screen, you know?
Oh, they did it.
So if I wanted to sue them, yeah, I could sue them for every single lecture that they had in which they showed that video.
Especially if you got this letter from, I mean, gee whiz, you know, they tell you when you have an auto accident, don't admit guilt. Well, that lawyer admitted guilt.
Right.
You got him dead to rights.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was saying, in other words, if I launched a lawsuit, it was going to gum up the works, and I was going to blow it for the entire UFO community, you know, by putting a dispersion on the disclosure project, you know, and I should think twice about it because I probably wouldn't win the case. You know, come on, you know. Couldn't win the case? How could I not win the case? You know?
Well, yeah, you should have contacted him back and said, well, you know, that's fine. I won't sue as long as you're willing as long as Dr. Greer's willing to donate his Mercedes-Benz and so forth and so on to charity.
Actually, that's what I said. I wrote him and said almost those exact words.
But, yeah, you'd have to sue to get that ball. Okay.
Never heard from him again after that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you wouldn't unless you sued.
That's right. That's right. Why does it take, you know, a gun to their head, which is suing, you know?
Yep.
It just really turned me off. And around that time, I just sort of washed my hands of the whole UFO research. I still talk about it on radio interviews, but I am no longer an active UFO researcher. I do not screen videos. I do not screen UFO reports. I refer everyone to George Filer, you know, or Jim Mars, or some of these other people who are a little more affluent, shall we say, and have the time, the money, the inclination, and the equipment, you know.
Oh, that's too bad. I'm always disappointed in when human nature, you know, gets that way. And oh, well, that's too bad.
Well, it's fine for me because I know what I saw and I know what I videotaped, and I thank the great spirit above for finally letting me have a record of these things that I've been seeing all my life. And it isn't as though I've seen dozens and dozens, like I mentioned to you on the phone last night, Otter. I've only seen like 9, maybe 10 my whole life until June the 11th. The next day, I saw 12 in one day. I was sitting at a red light and just saw one just come zipping down in the sky, and other people saw it too. I could see them in their cars pointing, you know, through their windshield at it. And then on the third day, we had, I think I counted 8 Air Force jets just combing, making a grid of this entire area of Johnson County, Texas, where Cleburne is the county seat. And that went on for 2 or 3 days. I mean, we had contrails and chemtrails out the yin-yang. I mean, this was such an incredibly active place.
Wow.
After that video. and the news came out about that UFO. That it's just something people had never seen in this area before.
I don't know whether you just intimated this, but it just, do you think possibly these chemtrails might be attempts to flush UFOs that are otherwise invisible, to flush them out possibly? Because I understand that the materials that they are spraying into the sky are slightly radioactive.
I've heard those reports, Otter. I really have. And in this particular, remember, I'm not far from Carswell, the infamous Carswell Air Force Base.
Yeah.
That's up in Fort Worth, you know. I've been asked that. I've been on a few shows in which they asked me to look into chemtrails, not contrails, because,
yeah.
You know, a commercial jet can make a contrail, but a chemtrail is different. And I went out to a field one day where there were chemtrails, looked like a tic-tac-toe in the sky. I mean, it was just incredible that particular day. And people were reporting this spider web kind of substance out in the weeds of this field. I went out and got a sample of it and put it in an airtight baggie, and then I also brought sort of a medicine jar, which is airtight as well, and put a sample. It was sort of like a real thin cotton candy, if you will, sort of like a thick spider web.
I found some of that in the early 60s out in the woods when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And they used to call it angel hair, and it
right.
Today I would it was kind of mysterious. Nobody really knew what it was. I kind of wonder though if it might not have been military chaff or something that was being, you know, released in training practices, you know, reflective radar. And knowing what I know today, if I were to look at the same material, which I just threw down on the ground, it might have even been to the fiber optic. Very thin, but has some real substance to it. It was kind of a glisteny white.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I put it in an airtight baggie and in an airtight jar, as I mentioned, and then in a brown bag. I didn't want any UV rays hitting it or, you know, anything like that. And then I was heading off to the Pittsburgh lab in Dallas to have it analyzed. I'd called them on the phone, and they said for $85, they would tell me what it is, you know. And I thought, I'll put out the $85, and I'll go on any radio show that'll have me, and I'll tell them what I found, you know. Well, by the time I get halfway to the lab, I thought, well, I'm sitting at a traffic light. Let me look in the bag and see if that stuff is still there. It wasn't there. Empty jar, empty baggie, no residue, nothing. I put my hand inside the bag to see if there was something sticky, you know, like some sort of residue, nothing.
Criminy.
My particular interpretation of chemtrails is that they are trying to produce rain.
Yeah.
Because here in North Texas, we've had a lot of droughts, okay? And interestingly enough, within 3 days of chemtrails, we always get rain. Always. And up, you know, this is in Cleburne is where Tornado Alley begins.
Yep.
So
they're on Fort Worth, yeah.
Well, no, actually, right here in Cleburne, it begins here. You know, we can see them forming just right off to the north of us, from my house, a couple of miles.
You're south of Fort Worth, aren't you?
Yes, 20-odd miles, about 23 miles south of Fort Worth, due south of Fort Worth. And the amazing thing is that the chemtrails, especially in the year 99, 2000, and 2001, were so heavy, it was almost daily out here, until finally the major news networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox, started doing stories on it, you know, because people were complaining that these chemtrails would leave residue on their houses, you know, the sticky spider web stuff, you know, on their car windows, and there would be the sticky film on the paint job of their new BMW, and then the paint would fade, and they couldn't wash it off. It was like a sticky substance, and they couldn't wash it off. And people were really getting up in arms about this. And then suddenly, it all stopped. And now we see chemtrails usually in the summertime, which is right about now. They ought to begin. For the next couple of months, we'll start seeing chemtrails again.
I saw them here in March. I just walked over the convenience store about 100 yards away, and I looked. That was a clear day other than perfectly parallel clouds that are very obvious. I mean, nature doesn't produce cookie cutter, you know, long, you know, it looked like music staff, evenly spaced from east to west exactly, from as far north as I could see to as far south as I could see these clouds, you know, probably at a 15,000-20,000 foot level and evenly spaced probably about a half a mile apart.
Oh.
I just couldn't believe it. Like an idiot, I didn't take a picture of it, but that's the first time. It was really interesting.
But at least you saw it, and you know in your heart and in your soul that you saw it.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody can go to weatherwars.info, and you can see, you know, some of the information there. The fellow that has that domain was a guest on the Coast to Coast show, and I called him the next day and I was talking to him about it and told him about my site. He says, "Oh yeah," he says, "I've been on your site." And he says, the reason why he was on Coast to Coast is because he was talking about how hard it had become to predict the weather, and he believed that there was a major human manipulation of weather going on, and I had this prophecy on my website, you know, dating back to 98, about 2005 would be the year of the great havoc.
Oh, yes.
And he said, yeah, he says, "I've been on your site," and it was linked to my site, and I took the article down. It's not linked now, but shortly after that, I got a donation from an official of National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as long as I swore extraordinary secrecy about for his name, you know. So they're aware something's going on, and that the Great Spirit knew that it was going to be going on 7 years ago.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
I mean, that is just, we are so blessed to have this knowledge beforehand, you know, for those who listen.
Well, I was...
Those who heed.
Yeah, I was just told, the voice just said, you know, that in the future, the year 2005 will be known as the year of the great havoc, because the weather will become so bad, so it's possibly to even shut down all but the fastest computers on the planet, and wake up and write that down, you know. So I woke up and wrote it down, and then I was kind of expecting, as the year approached, I expected things to start up in September, and of course we had the four hurricanes in September 2004, and then last winter, then they announced, you know, that the Gulf Stream had shut down. Last winter was just horrible for Europe, and then so many other things are going on, the Vatican and the Pentagon and climatologists and glaciologists, you know, everybody's gotten into this act, and
shock and awe,
yeah,
you know, that was last year.
Got a call from a radio show out in the Rockies in Idaho, because they had such a horrible snowpack that it was collapsing buildings.
Oh.
And now they've got problems with flooding. And, it's really, really, really interesting. And I was kind of halfway expected the tornado season to really get going, rip roaring. And I haven't noticed any unusual amount of tornadoes. But they had snow in the Horn of Africa last week. And there was,
oh, isn't that amazing?
At least one death attributed to it.
Yes.
And a friend of mine was told years and years ago that he didn't write it down, so he can't remember what would happen after Kilimanjaro lost its snowpack. But when I told him about this incident in Somalia, I believe it was, he said, "Oh, really?" He says, "Is there still snow on Kilimanjaro?" And I said, "No." I said, "It hadn't been since March." And he went, "Ooh," you know, and he said, years ago he was told... something was going to happen, but he couldn't remember what it was. He just knew something was going to happen after that. Hmm. And, that's fellow by the name of Ben Yosef. He's a Texan, and his website's at TorahVoice.org. He spent, up until about 2001, of the 21 years previous to that, he spent 14 of it in Israel. He became the first non-Jew to receive an Orthodox ordination as a Magid, which is a storyteller, one who clarifies, a kind of an itinerant preacher. In other words, they had a lot of respect for him. You know, when you get heavy-duty rabbis, and the man who ordained him was seated at number 23 in the newly restored 71 Sanhedrin, and these are the guys that are going to decide where the temple's going to be rebuilt, you know.
Yes.
When they got that much respect for a non-Jew who's claiming to be a descendant of Joseph of Egypt, like a lot of us are. Now, this is the kind of guy that, the audience is going to be hearing more about him later. The other thing I wanted to draw everybody's attention to is www.BibleDecoded.com. There is a fellow who is an ex-Jehovah's Witness that went the rounds with his church because they got involved with the UN as a non-governmental organization. And he believes that if the United Nations Security Council expands to 10 members during, I believe it's the first week of July, but he said, and the guy's got two earned doctorates. He didn't do the dissertation, so he doesn't have the degrees, but one of them is in statistics. And I think his evidence is worth looking at. He said that if that happens, and he has an explanation how he did the, there's a lot of dates in the Bible, and he used the countdown from 9/11 and from the terrorist attack in Russia and some other things. He said if this happens, then he says you can expect the UN to roll out the Mark of the Beast by the following July, and then by spring of 2008, the beginning of Armageddon. And so there's some really interesting stuff, and that's the reason why I've had my head down and haven't been doing too much discussion in my own discussion group, because I've been going through some real interesting stuff here lately. But, yeah, it's getting dicey. You know, a lot of people, we've got about 400 people in our internet community, in our email list, and everybody for the last month or so has been feeling like the shoe is getting ready to drop.
Yes.
They just didn't know what was going to happen, and I didn't either until I got interested in the Bible code and never downloaded any software until a couple days ago when I was doing a Google search for Bible code and come up with it, this website. It's a different domain, but it points to the same website. It's definitely worth it's truebiblecode.com, and of course that also points Bible Decoded also points to that, but it's kind of hard to read because it's very detailed and everything. But if you just go to the front page, and if you go to the truebiblecode.com link and then just click on home and start reading, it's going to take some study, but you'll get an idea what this guy went through. And
let the wind blow, let the truth be known.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
To all mankind again, Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper, oh yeah.
But he says if let me get the exact date, so I want to tell everybody to watch out for this, and that way we'll have it. He said that if the UN Security Council, July 7th or 8th, he says that will be the test of his scholarship and the sign to look for. If they expand to 10 permanent members, he says that will be the birth of the image of the beast. It's a temporal mirror image of the UN General Assembly, and then by the following July, every corporate person to carry that's corporations carry the name of the beast. And of course, we've got the technology now. Worth a look, truebiblecode.com. Anyway, hey, didn't mean to get you off on. And folks, Red Elk asks everybody to pray for him. He's going to be doing some traveling, and by the way, Jason, I'm not trying to end our interview. I just wanted to get a few thoughts in there while I still remember them, because I have a lot of senior moments. So go ahead.
That's no problem. No problem. I'm sure that the listeners appreciate that information, and I hope that they look into it. It's fascinating.
I don't know if you've ever been to BibleUFO.com, or is it UFO Bible? One or the other. It's got the best website I've ever seen for evidence of Bibles and the UFO, and definitely worth a look. The guy's not selling anything, grinding any axes. He's just got some tremendous information on there. And,
sure.
There's the prophecies in the Bible that talk about it. Well, Jesus himself said that in the last days there'd be signs in the heavens and in the earth.
Right. And who are the heavenly hosts?
Yeah. Yeah, and
I mentioned it in my book.
And Bible UFO points out that every time in the English Bible when they use the word heaven, it's being translated from the original language. It means sky. It doesn't mean outer space.
Right, the sky above.
Yeah.
That's right now. That's a hot topic. The Bible Code, the Da Vinci Code, if you will, when I was in college, I was actually a student teacher in philosophy and religions of the world. And then once I graduated, they asked me to stay on a semester as an instructor, which I did. And my particular class was religions of the world. And the only reason I did it, Otter, was I found it really amazing. Out of this huge textbook, the size of a Dallas phone book, they go into every religion from Catholicism to Islam, Muslim, to Seventh-day Adventists, Jehovah Witnesses. Nowhere is there Native American information in that textbook. They touched on the Hopi prophecies, but it was like a half a page, you know, and it was more or less in the category of speculation.
Yeah.
And I found that just, you know, incredibly intimidating. So I set about learning all I could about Native American heritage and Native American religion, and pretty much spent the entire semester, you know, relating all I could about Native Americans, because in the semester previous, we had already discussed all of these major Christian and Jewish religions.
What year was that?
Pardon me?
What year was that?
That would have been 73.
Wasn't a lot of information available. That very spotty. Back
no
then.
Internet either at that time.
Yeah.
This was all library. You know, I was in libraries all the time, checking out stacks and stacks of books. I went to libraries as much as people go to grocery stores.
Well, probably the biggest thing that ever happened with the Hopi prophecy was the publishing of the Techqua Ikachi, Techqua Ikachi, by David Monongi and three other elders, one of whom recently passed away. He was the most elderly of the elders. Dan, can't remember his last name right now, but David was the adopted father of my teacher, mixed blood Cherokee teacher Zula Brinkerhoff, and Zula had been the secretary to the governor of Utah. And she'd run Pipe Spring National Monument down in southern Utah, but she had been adopted by the traditionals, and was one of their official spokesmen for years and years and years. And she wrote a book called God's Chosen People of America, which you can get a copy of at addall.com. Just click on the used books, and her last name was Brinkerhoff. First name is Zula, Z-U-L-A. Zula had been very active in rescuing people, taking in food five times through the lines at Wounded Knee, and she was a close confidant of David or Thomas Bunyaki and all those guys from the early 60s.
Sure.
And, but, you know, other than her book that was published maybe in the early 70s, and there just wasn't a whole lot, and Techqua Ikachi newsletters didn't come out to the late 70s. There was a few newspaper articles. If anybody really wants to know what was published and when, and, you know, would like to go from the, if they'd like to get a scholarly book that will tell you everything was published and when, it's a book that's called The Invention of Prophecy, and it was written by a Danish a fellow with a PhD. I don't have his name right now, but it's absolutely probably the best source to know what was published and when. And, you know, and basically his premise he was trying to prove was that the whole thing as it rolled out kind of gained momentum, and that the Hopi kind of embellished on things and so forth, but he didn't really, I don't think he appreciates Native culture and how things get rolled out in Native culture. And but anyway, it's a good read, and probably the most authoritative source from what I've seen about who said what and when and where it was published and what dates, and The Invention of Prophecy. But back in 73, there wasn't much available at all.
Well, actually, I found a great deal, actually, about Nakota, Lakota, Dakota, and also Cheyenne, Comanche, Crow.
Well, Frank Waters, you know, his stuff came out, I believe, in the late 60s, early 70s, something like that. The Book of the Hopi, that's kind of got everything rolling.
Right, and you know, Black stuff, Elk Speaks, that was out.
That stuff was starting, I was just talking about Hopi, but stuff, back when you were really starting to get into it, it was still a real, very young field, and it was hard to find, and you, if you don't know the name of a book, you can't even get it through interlibrary loan, so, yeah, it's
That's
through
right.
the internet, you know.
And I did read all of the Carlos Castaneda books.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. I can recommend that. Just anything with the name Carlos Castaneda, A Separate Reality, was one of his best, I believe.
He cried so much by AIM. It's, you know, they hate him. Oh, that Invention of Prophecy was the author is Geertz, G-E-E-R-T-Z. And Armin W. Geertz. And that you can get that. Just put that.
Excuse me, Otter.
Go ahead.
My brother. I'm getting the feeling that grandfather is going to relate to me soon. I have that feeling. I'm going into a what some people may call a trance. With me, it's a dreamlike state. Apparently, he's giving me a prediction here pretty soon. So I may have to end the interview.
No problem.
I would like to say to everyone, please sign the Leonard Peltier petition. He suffered long enough.
Yep.
We all know that. This will be a remarkable year for weather, tornadoes, and hurricanes. Be watchful of that. Guard yourselves against spiritual attack. And trust in yourself and in your friends and in the Great Spirit of whom all blessings lie. And I must go now, Otter. I'm grateful for the interview.
Let the truth be known to all mankind.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Secrets deep inside your heart, keep a wise of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known.